Kaleem Kerr has fought for civil rights in Madison and the country for decades. The former head of the Madison Area Urban League, Kaleem is now fighting to establish preschools for kids through his One City project. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Kaleem Kerr. You are the
sunshine of my life. Welcome, everyone. This is Kaleem Kerr, your host of Perspectives. I am here in studio with two wonderful women who I have a great deal of respect for, and one who is on the phone, who is also someone that I go way back with, who's been doing great work in the community for many years. But I'd like to welcome to the show Ms. Fabiola Hamden and Ms. Teresa Tellez-Giron. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, close enough.
Say it correctly for me.
Tellez-Giron.
Giron. Okay, got it. And then Gloria Reyes is on the phone. Gloria is with the city of Madison. Fabiola and Teresa both work for the county and do a lot of work with children and families. So welcome to the show, you three.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you.
All right. So Gloria has a limited time. She's a former police officer and security detail leader. And I think she's got a shadow, the mayor, protect him or something like that. Yeah. But her life is really busy down at City Hall. So, Gloria, I'm going to jump right into this because I know people are really interested to hear from you all and how, you know, just build the show. So let me just say a little bit about this show. We're doing this show because the world has become so divided. And some will argue it's always been that way. It's partially true, but politically it's as though we're intentionally dividing people up. To pit people against each other, and we're losing the ability to hear each other, to come to some common ground of understanding. So, you know, I think about my years in Washington, D.C., and just being there for a decade and seeing a lot of it even transition then, where people were still a little bit more open to talking across boundaries. When I left in 2010, you know, if you were identified as a Democrat, you know, it was hard to get a meeting with a Republican, and it didn't used to be that way. Well, Madison, where we live, and others who are listening to this in other places, it's gotten the same way. And there's a lot of things that we've got to do to address the needs of our children and the needs of families. I'm fearful that a lot of those needs and issues aren't being addressed because we can't even come to the table with each other. So the purpose of this show is to promote the perspective that people have. And for this particular show, you know, I had I wanted you guys on even before I went on this Western tour, but there were places I had never been before by car that told me in the 12 days I was gone with my sons that this is a beautiful country that people don't know, they don't respect. There are beautiful people all over this country. There are people who are of Latino descent, Mexican-American descent, who've been here longer than all of us. In a lot of these communities, this is their home. And so I saw all of this and I said, you know, this gives me an opportunity to talk to three dynamic women who've been doing work in this community for a long time. You guys just didn't get here yesterday.
Nope.
And I want people to hear from you and your experience, what it's like to grow up here in Madison, to provide leadership. So I just really want to get into that. So, Gloria, I'm going to start with you because I know you have limited time. Tell us a little bit about your experience growing up here in Madison. Were you born? When did you come here? Where'd you go to school? Give us some background on you.
Sure. Thanks, Kaleem, for having me on the show. I really do appreciate you focusing the show on what our Latino community brings to this community. I was born in Wautoma, Wisconsin, which is crazy. When I tell people that, they just laugh. My parents were migrant farm workers, so they traveled through the seasons. We traveled a lot as a young kid. So I remember being, you know, Texas, California. I mean, we traveled it a lot. And it was in the early 70s when my parents actually, they were part of the whole labor union movement in fighting for better wages and living conditions for migrant farm workers, along with Cesar Chavez. And I remember them talking about, you know, I don't remember this, I was just a baby, But then I'm marching from Wautoma to Madison. And they talk about how when they got to Madison, they just fell in love with the city. My dad said that he remembers going and walking on Bascom Hill with, you know, him and the kids and my mom, and how he just dreamed that someday we would be able to go to college on UW campus. And it was, you know, so shortly after that, they settled here in Madison. They came back. They were able to get a lot of help from UMOS, Centro Hispano, Urban League, a lot of assistance in really just trying to change the way of life and make things better for, you know, our family. And, you know, my mom came from, like, a really, she's got, like, 12 other brothers and sisters, and they live all over the country, but slowly a lot of them ended up coming and settling in Madison when we did. So at this time, we have nobody in our family who does that hard, you know, work in the field. A lot of the children, you know, have gone to college and have really done really well for themselves. So growing up, we were one of really few families in Madison, Latino families, when I got here. There wasn't very many of us. We knew each other, right? I knew Fabi, you know, Teresa. I mean, we were, it was just a really few of us. And we were really a united, you know, group of Latino families. And so, you know, I went to high school. I went to elementary school here for a little bit. My dad ended up losing his job, and I remember living with grandma, aunts. I mean, we were homeless at times, where, you know, we had really no place to go, sleeping on living room floors. And, you know, we went to Oklahoma for a little while. My dad was trying to find a job there. And, you know, the struggle was real. I think we definitely lived in poverty, and it took a lot of sacrifices from my parents to really just pull through and just, you know, just move through the struggle and just continue to fight for a better life for us. And so we finally came back to Madison, and we settled here. I went to high school. And then I attended UW-Madison. I actually went to Madison College, and then I attended UW-Madison. Received a bachelor's degree in behavioral science and law and criminal justice. I did grow up in the, you know, Darbo area, and, you know, I just remember always wanting to be a cop. I always wanted to be a police officer, but there was nobody who looked like me on the police force. There was, you know, I was told over and over again, oh, you can't be a cop, you're too little. You know, there are no Latinas, there are no females who can become cops. And, you know, so that dream would vanish pretty quickly. There was no support anywhere around me that supported my wanting to be a cop. And so, you know, I navigated through the criminal justice system. I worked for the public defender's office for a while as a investigator for the public defender's office. And then I worked for the Department of Justice for a couple of years. And an interesting story is that, you know, after while I was working for the Department of Justice, I was like, well, I want to become I want to go into the FBI. And then a good friend of mine had recommended me to speak with now Chief Koval. He was a sergeant at the back in the day as a sergeant. And so I met with him and asked him some questions about the FBI, but it was interesting how he totally sold me on Madison Police Department before I walked out of that meeting. And he was like, he was the only one over all these years that told me that you would make an excellent cop. You know, we need people like you. And so it was just really, really cool. And so I ended up applying, and I spent 13 years in law enforcement. Now I'm here in the mayor's office, and that was really an interesting story, too. I actually got a call from the mayor's secretary at my detective desk, and he wanted to see me that afternoon, and I was just freaking out, right, because I'm like, oh, the mayor wants to see me. What did I do wrong? So then he offered me this position, and it's been great ever since. It's really an honor to continue to serve a city and a community that has helped me so much, in navigating and just, you know, throughout the years, helping my family and helping to support me and my efforts and, you know, Centro Hispano and the people who work there. So it really is an honor to be here in this position to be able to really impact change in understanding the needs of our children and our families, because I was there, so I've lived it, and I understand it, and to be at the table to be able to when those big decisions are being made, to give that perspective is really important, and I think that's something that we bring as, you know, Latinos in our community, is that we have so much history here that oftentimes it is forgotten, and we bring so much perspective and value to this community. So, you know, it's been, I'm honored to be here, Kaleem. Thank you so much. You know, I don't know if I ran through this quickly.
You did a great job. Like, did you write that down?
No.
Nah, who's going to follow her?
I know. Well, we know you have to go, but we appreciate it. And we'll have you on the show another time, too, you know, to do some more follow-up kinds of questions. But, Gloria, thank you for all that you do for us in the community and, you know, all that you have done and for what your family's done here, too.
Thank you.
You know, we appreciate you all. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Adios.
Adios. Ciao. Bye.
Bye, Gloria.
All right. Teresa. Oh. Let's talk about you.
Does that mean I'm the oldest one?
I have no idea. I know is this. I'll tell you, and Gloria mentioned that you all might not have known a lot of people, but we all knew who you were. Mm-hmm. Because all of you were very beautiful young women. Oh. Seriously.
Thank you.
And still are.
Thank you.
No, I'm serious. But, you know, when you're young, that's what you pay attention to, those little things. And yeah, I had, you know, Ramon Avila and Avilas, where I was closer to them. And then Mario Zepeda and his family. So I got a chance to get to know the community. And that's actually how I met Gloria, was through Maria.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
And she had, I won't put her out there, but she dated a friend of mine in high school, too. So got to know her a little bit that way. But yeah, you guys, you know, just it's important for people to know that folks have been here a long time and are making mm-hmm, contributions mm-hmm. and they deserve equity and opportunity. But tell us about you.
Well, I'm from Mexico City. I came first came to Atlanta, Georgia, because I was given the opportunity. I was finishing the university in Mexico and I was given the opportunity to come to Georgia to continue to study. But then I got married, or I met my ex-husband. I got married, and he was from Madison. So one day we came to visit his grandparents. And as soon as I got into this city, I just got this magic feeling that this was my place to be. I don't know, the lake, the capital, I don't know. I decided this is where I want to be. This is where I want to have my children. And we moved here, and then I stayed here. I came here back in the 80s. I'm not going to say exactly when, but my parents are, you know, we're all from Mexico, and I was the first one to come here. And when we moved to Madison, I knew, I always had this feeling, even though I was studying international relations, that I wanted to work with children and with my community. And I had quite a few struggles when I was living in Atlanta as I became undocumented, actually, for a small period of time. And I was working as an undocumented person in a Mexican restaurant. And the story that really connects me to my community and why I wanted to give back is one day the immigration came to my job. And all I knew and I was trained to do is run to the garbage can. And we all ran to the garbage can. And that was a feeling that I never had in my entire life of, like, this fear that I was going to be lacking a place and, you know, immigration was going to take me. This fear that I just now feel for my families that I work with.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of gave me the strength to want to work with the Latino community and do more work in social justice. So when I came here, this is a funny story because I look at Fabi, and I was the first receptionist when Centro Hispano opened his doors. I was given the opportunity through Goodwill to do my training at Centro Hispano, and they gave a grant to Centro Hispano to have me be there. And I was the first receptionist when they opened their doors, working with the Cuban community and working with the migrant community. And I still remember Fabi and her sister later around coming through the doors, two young girls, you know, with a lot of...
I was five.
And her family, you know.
We believe you.
And so it's just that that brings me to the point that I think many leaders in the community are connected in many ways, either by tragedy, by work, by, you know, we've been together for a long time. We know what we want. After that, I became the youth program coordinator, and then the general support coordinator, and then I moved on to work with the county doing child protective services. I'm a bilingual social services specialist there for the last 25 years. Fabi and I have been connected ever since. I mean, we've been working together. I mean, Gloria was a little child. No, I'm just kidding. But the entire family is not made of only Latino women. This morning we had a meeting. Mm-hmm. Fabi and I had the Latino Children and Families Council, and Charlie Daniels was there. And I still remember, she kind of brought me, gave me this flashback of remembering how well we used to work together with the African American community back in the 80s, back in the 90s, you know. We all knew each other.
That's right.
We were all working together to have a better community, because that's what Madison is about, you know. And I just got this feeling, this is not what Madison is about right now. This is not what the United States is about. You know, Fabi and I have been together, Juan Lopez, you know, you name it, every single, I see the young kids that we used to mentor, and they're now like Gloria Gomez. When I see her, it's like, you used to be a troubled kid, and I remember taking you with me to the camps, because we used to do the camps, we will go and do trainings with the young kids. And when I see her, it's like, I am so glad that you were part of my life. And she said, no, I'm glad you were part of my life. And I said, no, you trained me. You trained me to be the person that I am. You know, the person that I understood the young people's struggles when I was, you know, when the Latino community was starting to grow. And that made me be a better person. You know, that made me listen, help me understand that I need to listen to the people in the community. I don't need to just come across as I know everything, but rather to as I know how to listen to everybody. So we have created together the La Soup, which is a wonderful organization now, the Latino Children and Families Council, the radio program. We also have a radio program.
That's right, La Movida.
La Movida that we do every month. We have, you know, Fabi just finished putting together, she will talk about it probably, El Día de los Niños. I mean, we just, we work so well together that, you know, we're able to tell each other. And I think that's what I appreciate when we're not doing something right. When we're losing track of what we need to do for this community. And the thing that really I understand is this community changes every day. You know, when I came here back in the 80s, it was the Cuban people and the farm workers. You know, we were doing the amnesty, we were doing the farm workers law, we were working together to do that. Later now it's like Colombians and, you know, Puerto Ricans, Bolivians, Peruvians. I mean, the community, you cannot say, okay, what do Mexicans do? It's just not Mexicans.
Correct.
Only here, you know, everybody keeps referring to us as the Mexicans in the community, but it's not just Mexicans. I mean, Fabi is here. She's gonna tell you that no Mexican, not only Mexicans. So then later around, I brought my first my mother, then my sister and my brother, and then my dad. And my mom has become such a role model for me all the time. You know, I mean, there are people who work hard in the community too. She just retired, but she was the person that was putting together all the services for the elderly. Mm-hmm. And my sister, who is with Shiva, the head of the Latin, the co-chairs of the Latino Health Council.
Mm-hmm.
So really the whole family, just like Fab is going to tell mm-hmm. you to, it's not just one person working, it's the whole family. Mm-hmm. The kids, our children, our now my grandchild, my brother's grandchild will become probably mm-hmm. the next generation of leaders. And we're still learning. I mean, this is what we are about. But I can tell you that we're always together mm-hmm. on this. We're not separated, even though it feels like sometimes, you know, like I say to Charlie this morning, we need to continue what we left behind, you know, working mm-hmm. together.
That's mm-hmm. right.
Yeah.
That's right. And Fabi, when we come back from this brief break,
okay,
I'm going to jump in with you, and then I want to chop it up with you all about, you know, Teresa, you said about meeting Fabi and coming into Central Hispano and mm-hmm. then having worked with so many children and families over the years. What's different now mm-hmm. than what was going on then, and how do you see that impacting children and families? This is Kaleem Kerr. We'll be back in a minute with Perspectives.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
Greetings, everyone. This is Kaleem Kerr back with Perspectives, and I'm getting the perspective of Miss Fabiola Hamden and Miss Teresa Tellez Iron.
Mm-hmm.
I say it right.
Getting better.
Yeah.
Getting better.
So let me tell you, I took so many years of Spanish. It's embarrassing, but I was afraid to speak it, and I don't know where that fear came from. My son, he's been in Spanish immersion ever since he was in kindergarten. My wife speaks it very well. You guys mm-hmm. should mm-hmm. talk mm-hmm. to Lisa sometimes, and maybe be surprised people would know. But yeah, I just developed a fear for it. I don't know where it comes from. I tell people, for me to learn a language, I probably have to go live there for a while to really
practice it.
Just practice.
Lisa,
let's start right now. Right.
Yeah. I need to start right now. I will mess up this show. But Bobby, give us a little bit of give us some background on you. You know, your experience, how you got here. Mm-hmm. You know, what's your journey been?
So first of all, I wanted to thank you, muchas gracias, Kaleem, for having us to take a little bit of a break in our busy lives, right? And I think as you open up the program saying, what's happening, where are we going, are we getting all distracted with what's going on and not us having the time to chat and talk. And programs like this are really needed for all of us to come and just tell you a little bit about our ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. And also, a huge hello to the listeners. Well, I'm from La Paz, Bolivia, and I came here about 33 years ago. When I was 5. No, just kidding. 33 years ago, just finished high school, and my mother had been diagnosed with a very rare brain tumor. So nobody can operate it in Bolivia and or Brazil. And somehow my mother knew this friend of a friend who was in Madison, Wisconsin, working at the UW hospitals. And they said that they could check what she has, but there was no hope of, you know, doing anything. So she came first before we did. And obviously, she needed to know English or anything. She needed to kind of see the situation. It's a long story. Making it very short, then my brother and sister, younger brother and sister, came to be with mom. And I stayed back with my father because I was, you know, graduating. I was a senior. So things got a little complicated where my mom, the doctors decided to do a pro bono surgery, kind of being her, the guinea pig of this. They've seen this case like, I don't know, three in the world or something like that. So about 18 doctors got together to kind of, yeah, it's really amazing. So, you know, now I see back, I'm like, oh my God, you know, what? But for us, it was important to keep the family together. Since I graduated, my dad and I came here to be with mom. At this time, my brother and sister were enrolled in high school. So I, you know, and for myself was like, I'm just here temporarily for 3 months and then go back because I need to go to the university over there. And what Teresa is saying also is very true. I think we came with ingrained in our minds that we have to study. There's no way, any you know, anything else, but we have to study, right? So came here, things in the family, we moved in a two-bedroom apartment. We were not wealthy in Bolivia, but we were okay. So coming here, the culture shock, it was winter, and I told my brother, please take me to downtown. I want to see downtown. I'm in the United States. I used to watch the Dynasty, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
In Bolivia.
We're I like, did
okay.
Too.
Yeah. So then, you know, Jesse takes me to downtown Madison in a winter. We came in December, and it was empty. All this is now. I'm thinking, okay, where the heck am I? You know, what is this downtown? And this is downtown. Anyways, lots of stories like that. But then I think our will to be together, it was much bigger than whatever we can encounter as immigrants, as not speaking English, not knowing anybody. Mom went to very hard surgery and really no, there was no hope. She went to the surgery room saying, this is it. Either, you know, she makes it or not. And after that, the process of recovery was, I mean, still now after, you know, 33 years, is still, you know, in that process. But she's the most optimistic person you can ever imagine. I mean, she had multiple surgeries. She had all kinds of health problems. But if you talk to her, you're going to be like, oh, my gosh, I feel sick. She should be complaining, not me, right? But I think that's one of the values that we carry, no matter, you know, I mean, Terry from Mexico, Gloria, grown up here. I think our parents really kind of ingrain in our brains that we have to study. To be somebody, you have to study. And my parents always taught, you know, said to me or to my brother and sister, the day that you come with a diploma from the university or college, that's the day that we're going to say we as a parent succeed with you guys. So then just talking about myself, then all that family crisis with my mom kind of passed by. And I will work at Burger King, you know, and because now we have medication, we have bills that we don't have health insurance. We are really in a very altruistic visa. And so it was, I don't know how we made it. But then I will say, okay, I need to speak English because I couldn't even answer the phone. So then taking classes at Madison MATC that time at some college, found a nice program at the university one summer. It was the best summer ever. A lot of people from all over the world came. And then I studied English, and I think Gloria mentioned it, but I will pass University Avenue, and in the summer, you see the people graduating, and I will be like, oh, someday I would love to graduate. I would love to see myself like that internally, right? So then I end up going to Madison College because, you know, And that's the time that Tere, Gloria, anybody you will ask, there were no Latinos. I will be in the bus. If I will see somebody speaking Spanish, I will be like, you know, where are you from? Talk to me in Spanish. So that's the time that I really embraced that I needed to, you know, learn English, educate myself so I can get a better job, not Burger King anymore or cleaning offices or any of that, right? Graduated with an associate degree in computer operations from MATC. I hate computers until now. And I took that because I couldn't speak like you. I could understand English a little bit better, but my speaking was horrible. And so then I end up, you know, taking that class. I had a job before even I finished my degree, my associate degree in an insurance company, making $7.50 an hour, and the minimum wage was $3.25 that time. I was like, I am rich. This is it. I bought my car. But then I later find out that it was horrible. I was miserable. I hate computers. Don't like my job. I was in San Pretty, even little. Oh, now it's bigger, but that time I was like, oh,
like
my
that
God.
Time, I tell people, Black people, we didn't go to Sun Prairie except for the Corn Fest and when they started Walmart. Other than that, I didn't know many people who lived there. Just one.
And it was in the boonies, right, for me that time. And I decided then that, okay, I probably should try the university. And, you know, a lot of people, my coworkers will be like, oh, it's really hard to get. This is one of the 10 best universities. It's very hard to... Well, I tried, got accepted. First day of classes, I was in Bascom Hall, like, yes, I made it, right? But because I was not used to, you know, I got lost at the university. And the first semester, I was put in probation because my grades were, like, awful. I will get lost going to classes, studying. I mean, all of that. And it really was hard. And I had to work too, because it wasn't really, you know, mom and dad and the whole situation at home with the medical care was horrible. So then I think somehow I made it, and by the fourth semester, I was in the dean's list. And that's when I started applying for scholarships and other grants that helped me do my master's degree in social work, School of Social Work. And I tell you, just finishing my undergrad, I got a job with CPS, and I was like, okay, finally, now to work, right? But then my professors were like, you should do your master's. I'm like, no master's. I'm done with school, and I'm tired. And they're like, well, you may not get accepted, but just apply. Applied, of course, accepted. And so remember I said the first day in Bascom Hall, I was like, yeah. So when I started my master's program, the first day I was dragging my feet like, oh, my God, there we go again. I'm poor. It paid off so well because I think, I tell a lot of girls, if I made it, you know, without really all the resources you guys have now, I think you can do it. So I think that's something that we all have in common. We want our generation, not only Latinas, people of color, to really embrace education, because that's all we can take with us. No matter what, where you go, you know, it's your education and that you can take with you. So that's in a nutshell how my life has been.
I want to ask you about Latina young women for a second, but first I want to say my idea of America, because I know as people of color, we want to be connected to each other, because we've arrived in this place that requires us to connect to people who have a common experience, and while our experiences might not be all similar, being seen as different. Being looked at differently, being treated differently. It's like there's all those things that we hold in common that aren't necessarily good things to have in common, right? But America is a place that, in my view, the definition of this place is difference. You know, the way the country was created, who it was created by, just the country. Now, the fact that there were people already here, America's always been a diverse country. There was a period where celebrating your differences was expected. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we were an ethnocentric society. And then as we created this notion of the United States of America, it was the United States mm-hmm. of America, not the United people, right? So we've been trying to figure out a way to unite. And I think the way we unite is through celebrating each other's differences, mm-hmm. identify, you know, being able to learn and understand who we are, where we come from, how we got to where we are. That's where the power of the relationships get developed. It's through that. Mm-hmm. It's not through trying to get everybody to learn one language. You know, they don't do that in Europe. They're trying to get everybody to learn multiple languages, you know. Mm-hmm. If we were a more racially homogenous society, we have those in South America and Africa and places like that. But then there are tribes or different communities within mm-hmm. different mm-hmm. faiths that make it different. But for us, you know, it is how we look. It's where we come from. We really are mm-hmm. a hodgepodge of a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And I personally think that we should find ways to celebrate mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. and to allow people to be different and to be comfortable with people doing different mm-hmm. things and celebrating their culture and finding ways to celebrate it with them, but being comfortable when they celebrate it by themselves. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's who mm-hmm. we are as a country. We should find ways as a city, as a community, to support mm-hmm. that. So, you know, I don't know if you have any thoughts about that, but also I wanted to tell me what you think about that. I wanted to ask you about young Latino women, what mm-hmm. they're dealing with too. Mm-hmm.
Can I, well, here's the thing, as, you know, and maybe this is similar to what Teresa or Gloria and others feel. After you work and then you sometimes, for me at least, was really I had to experiment and then be, you know, not know the game, the political game mm-hmm. and all of that goes on. So genuinely, they will ask you for something and you will be like, oh, sure, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. I think as we get older, we kind of know the game
being played,
right?
Yeah.
And then now we learn how to play the game. To your question, I think about Latinas, and it is very easy for us to sit down here and like, oh, you got to study, do this and do that. But we need the support of the people here, the community at large. Right. We need the support of organizations, schools, and make it easier and not harder for us to really flourish. And it's not about those people and us. I always tell people, I was telling you, my son plays hockey, you mm-hmm. know, whenever I have the time to talk to people about it's, you know, you, me, everybody, we're driving the same streets in Madison.
That's right.
Right? So right now, Latinos without documentation cannot get a driver's license. How, you know, if you think about it, if you give the opportunity to take the test, the study for the test, do the road test and stuff, how safer are we going to be? Right?
That's right.
It's not like, no, they should go back home. That should go back home. It's not happening, folks. We are here to stay. Now, the other thing is that, after school programming, I mean, we can go on and on about that. It's easy for us to say, oh, no, you know, you have to study hard. But particularly with our Latino community that don't have documentation, it's super hard for us even to verbalize that, you know, study hard and then you're going to be successful. Yeah. But how are you going to study hard then not be able to attend UW or the college if you don't have your green card or your papers, right?
That's right.
So it's super hard. And so it's we need to have this type of conversation to understand. It makes us understand better. I have students from the School of Social Work every year. The first thing I tell them is that, listen, I'm not going to tell you 1, 2, 3 about how to work on with the Latino community. You need to immerse yourself. We have Fiesta Hispana. We have Dia de los Colombianos Bolivianos. We have the Day of the Children. Come and just be there. Immerse yourself. That's how you are going to learn. And over, our students are always like, oh, my God, I was so afraid before. But it's just like, you know, the learning has to come that way. And then we bring so much diversity. We just had, I was telling you, the Saturday, Dia de los Niños, the Day of the Children. People came to see the culture, to see the music, the food, this festival, you know, all the comments that I have from people. I had no idea that many Latino families and children exist, first of all. And then what do we bring? it's just to make better up this community, you know, having.
And how many people you said came out?
Oh, over 2,000. We ran out of food and all that, but it was great to see. And not only mm-hmm. Latinos, we had people, you know. So
and those types of activities are so important because a huge part of who we are is our cultural DNA.
Mm-hmm.
It's who we are, but it's, you know, when you said you went home, you told me off when we were not on on the radio, you talked about going home to Bolivia and taking your son there mm-hmm. and seeing your family after so many years and just the feeling it gave you. It was like a rush of new energy.
Absolutely.
Well, you get that being around people like yourself mm-hmm. in the communities that you live in mm-hmm. because you don't get that experience every
mm-hmm.
day.
Mm-hmm.
And so people need that to keep them going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I don't want to just talk, but I
I'm going to ask Teresa, but I want to ask, you know, you heard her talk. You know, let me ask you about Latina women first, young women. You talked about the seeing these young women come in to Central Hispano and seeing Fabi when she was a little girl. And what's been the difference between then and now with regard to the emergence of young Latina women in Madison? What are they dealing with now that they might not have to have dealt with then, or vice versa? How is it different?
You know, I just, something that just happened to me yesterday. My daughter, the oldest one, has been home with me until today, and they were watching, and my half-brother was there on Sunday, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they were watching this program, 13 Reasons.
Oh, yeah.
I've never heard of it, but I said, bad idea.
I'm trying to tell my kids, don't watch
it. I said, they need to.
Because, oh, really? You think
yes,
so?
Yes.
Okay.
Because what it talks about is all the pressure that these teenagers have in school
uh-huh.
and how they're not listening to each other and how they're not providing the support to each other. When I was watching that program, I was just like, oh, my God. Because at first, when she says, oh, is this about a girl that committed suicide.
See, I thought it was
and
just
I'm
about
like,
suicide.
Turn it off. I'm like, turn it off right now. Mm. You guys don't need to be watching this. I said, this is it. And she says, Mom, sit down and watch it. And so I'm so glad I listened to it. Because if you watch it, you will know and understand their struggles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just one episode that I watched, I was like, oh, my God. And then my daughter and I had this conversation of how many times she has not helped someone that she thought was struggling in school.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, Mom, if I had watched this and if I had learned this, would I have been able to help somebody? You know, and I think that one of the things that I am very always careful about is not telling people what I think they should do.
Mm.
But allowing them to tell me what their struggles are, even with child protective services. It's like, you know, we are so quick on saying, you child abuser, you know, mm-hmm. you are drinking, you're doing this and you're doing that. But I always say, you know, there is a story behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody listened to that?
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody heard what's happening? And in order to help them before you jump on mm-hmm. conclusion that this is a drug addicted person, this is a mom that leaves her child mm-hmm. home alone. You know how many kids are left behind, you know, because parents have to work. Has anybody said, you know, let me help you find resources to leave your child in a safe place?
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? And so I always get this, like, when I'm struggling with something, like trying to understand somebody, I always get some message from somewhere that makes me kind of think about, okay, maybe this is something we need to teach more mm-hmm. in the schools to learn kids or young adolescents to understand each other. Because I know from my own experience that my kids were not learning from my experiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mom, there you go again. You came here and you struggle and you were poor and you were only eating tortillas and beans. And let me tell you the chancla story of, like, you know, your mom hit you with the chancla and you, that's why you're the person you are. Mom, I heard it all, you know, and that makes me think that that's true. You know, we can't give our children our story. You know, they have to learn from their own stories.
Yep.
They have to learn from their own mistakes. You know, I can't tell her, I did exactly that thing, and it went wrong. Because she will say, oh, well, let me try it. You know, let me see what went wrong.
So do your daughters and sons, do they see like you saw the struggles. Do they don't see as much struggle because you all have been more successful mm-hmm. in this environment, and you've had and to endure some of the same challenges mm-hmm. as your parents, possibly. But are they seeing a future for themselves here mm-hmm. in this community?
I really think, I mean, thinking about my own daughters, I don't mm-hmm. know, Fabi, but I always thought that because they had the support of extended family, because mm-hmm. these women, very strong women in mm-hmm. my family, and always supportive and always there for them, putting them in a bubble, that they will never suffer, that they will never be impacted by other communities and, you know, the crisis. I think that school is really difficult now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. the issues they have to deal with in terms mm-hmm. of discrimination and talking about each other and, you know, oh, look at that Mexican or look at that mm-hmm. black person, you know. Mm-hmm. It's very different. The pressure that they have now when people are more open about the racism they bring with them. Mm-hmm. I think it's way a lot more difficult. And I'm talking about my own daughter saying, that black guy, you know, and mm-hmm. me having to say, where did you get that from? Why are you talking like that? Mm-hmm. Well, that's what the other black person said about his own person, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's a struggle every day. And mm-hmm. I don't think as parents we are ever going to understand what they're going mm-hmm. through. You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have two boys, a 14-year-old middle schooler, and then soon to be a senior. He's a senior. He's going to graduate. And I tell you, it's hard to be parents, right? I used to do the parenting classes when I was in Child Protective Services and didn't have kids. What I was talking about, no idea. But I think, so we tried, and I think as they grow, and I tell parents that I work with too, as they grow, we have to tell them, listen, here we are. We're going to protect you. You have food. You have anything that we can possibly, you know, give it to you. However, at the end of the day, it's your life. You know, you don't want to brush your teeth. I mean, mm-hmm. what are we going to do? So that message, as they grow, I think it's helping me to really make them think. And I know, I mean, so my husband is Muslim. He's from Jordan, mm-hmm. and I'm Latina. And especially in middle school, I think my son gets that, are you Mexican or are you Arab? Or, you know, and even more now mm-hmm. with after the elections, right?
Yeah.
So people are kind of looking closely, I guess, his physical, you know, futures or whatever. And even in a hockey game, one time when another boy called him, hey, boy, go home. Some, you know, and
wow.
they're from Madison.
Mm-hmm.
So with the other one, it's a little bit different because he, thank God, has a group of friends that are very much like him, and then they do things together, and I'm so glad for that. So they're not much in the mix of, you know, I will ask, so are they, you know, how is like this? I never went to high school here. Tell me. And if you keep to yourself and you have your group of friends and you do things that you like, I was telling you about sports, they're pretty much in sports. And I think it's sort of a different experience they have. But taking my son for the first time to my home country, Bolivia, it was really a unique experience for him.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to go back and really, because it gave him a sense of, this is the family that we don't have over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you, he even said, what are we doing over there? Our family's here.
Right.
And
why are we living in the U.S.?
Yeah. And so I think it's a learning experience. Like Teresa says, you know, we're trying to equip them with a lot of our experiences. We tell them about struggles, we tell them about all that stuff, but at the end of the day, they're going to choose what they want to be.
And you know, one last thing I think that I have to say is the same thing with my other daughter. She just graduated from the Odyssey program.
And I also
went through the Odyssey program. I was the first year.
Oh,
she's
wow.
now 16 years or what, 13 years later. She graduates from there.
Yeah.
And one of the things she told me that really connected in my brain is that she said, Mom, I did not know that African Americans and people from other cultures had the same struggles we, as the Latino community, have. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean about having alternative programs like your school and like Odyssey, mm-hmm. because those university programs are just really not for us. Mm-hmm. You know, we still have a long ways to go for our kids to go to that university mm-hmm. and feel like they belong there, mm-hmm. you know?
So let me ask you, because we're going to close up soon. Mm-hmm. Should we go to a break? Okay, so we're going to go to a break. And when we come back, I want to ask you, if you had Donald Trump, Scott Walker, and Paul Soglin all sitting in front of you, your mayor, your governor, and your president, what would you tell them you wanted to see for your children in the future? We'll come back and answer that question. This is Kaleem with Perspectives.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
All right, this is Kaleem with Perspectives. I'm here with Fabiola Hamden and Miss Teresa Tellez Hiron. Had a great show, you guys, but we got to wrap this up, and I hate to do it. But I got to ask you that question, and if you should give me just a minute each response. I mean, if you had Donald Trump, that's all you had their attention span of. For Donald Trump, your mayor, Paul Soglin, your governor, Scott Walker, what would you tell them you needed them to pay attention to help our children and families move forward? Teresa?
To just be more sensitive about our cultures, the way you speak about the culture, the way you are putting the money into the budget, you know, be more sensitive and be more aware of what we need, not what you think we need, you know. Listen to the community, do more focus groups for the mayor specifically. Mm-hmm. For Trump, watch the way you talk, because our kids, every single mm-hmm. kid, even young kids, are listening. Mm-hmm. And that's, you're the role model for this country. Mm-hmm. And Scott Walker, recall.
Hey, you said it. he hears you. He still knows he's got some work to do.
Well, I think Mayor Soglin, I think I have a great respect because he put me in the Police and Fire Commission, although I didn't vote it for him. So that kind of gives me the perspective that, you know, it's not party lines. There's still a lot of work to do, Mayor, and I think you are in the, right track, but, you know, sometimes we feel like we're not listening, but I know you have the power to do that. Scott Walker, come to my house. I'll cook for you. Let's sit down and have a heart-to-heart conversation. I talked to your wife, and I know you have two boys, and I think we can, it's just we open up a little bit. I feel like sometimes, in some occasions, we wanted to talk to you, and it's this really cold feeling, and I don't know if it is because you don't know, or I don't know. It's just you know, I would love to, you know, really invite you over, and you'll see. We'll have a great time, and then we can tell you, and you can experience a little bit of our immigrant lifestyle. Donald Trump, what can I tell you? You are the leader. You are, you know, not only this country, all over the world, you've been watched. And if you do not really see what you're saying or what you're doing, huge bad things will happen, really bad things. And the people that are around, I mean, I will talk to his wife, Melania, please, really have him listen. As Teresa says, you are the role model. If you want to be a good role model, please listen that. When you open your mouth, we are billions of people listening to you. And I think you also need to come over
and then
just open up. We're here with good people, with hardworking people, and all we want is what you want. We study hard, work hard, and then have a good future in this country.
Now, the beautiful thing about this, as I wrap up, is there are people who are on my Facebook page who have direct links to Donald Trump, to Scott Walker, and definitely to Paul Soglin. Yeah. So I'm going to make sure they get a copy of this. And they say, y'all send this along. Mm-hmm. These leaders, they have to listen.
Yeah.
Yes. But I'm so glad we had a chance to listen to you today. And Gloria, if you're still listening, thank you for joining us for the time that you could. Appreciate you all.
Yeah, thank you, Kaleem, for inviting us.
Thank you.
Gracias,
thank you.
Kaleem.
This is Kaleem of Perspectives. We're signing off this week, and we will be back on next week from 1 to 2 p.m. next Tuesday, Central Daylight Time. Have a good day, everyone.
Make a man go stone wild. So I got to keep on.